Good evening, everybody. I always enjoy coming to the Buddhist Library. I've been coming to the Buddhist Library since 1987. Yeah, so 30 years. You were, I think, three or four residences ago. And it was actually the first place I went when I came to Singapore. I gave the first talk at the Buddhist Library. And so I've always really appreciated what the library does, how it encompasses all the Buddhist traditions, and how it makes Buddhist literature, scriptures and commentaries and treatises, available to the public, where everybody can come here and read and study. And that's so important to have, you know, so that's how you're really going to learn. And then, of course, having Dharma classes and all the other activities that Buddhist Library has done over the years. So I really appreciate everything. And Bhante's unwavering enthusiasm. And when you think about it, you know, he left his own country to come here and make the Dharma prosper and spread and proliferate here in Singapore. So that's really something, you know, to give up staying in your own country, coming in a different place, and his dedication to Singapore and all the Singaporeans is quite amazing, and you're extremely lucky to have him here. So please take good care of him. Tomorrow is his 80th birthday, so I know you just celebrated it, but yeah, it's quite an achievement to be 80, isn't it? Yeah, so let's take advantage and learn all we can from Bhante. Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about fake news. So, being an American, I know all about fake news these days. Okay. And it is really fake. It was quite interesting is, of course, Trump calls the regular media fake news. But when you read or hear what he says, he's actually the source of the fake news. What he says is not reliable at all. So I thought I would talk about how to discern the truth, how to live a good life in the era of fake news. And I thought to do the talk based on Nagarjuna's Precious Garland. So Nagarjuna was a second century Indian saint or a sage. And he's most widely known for his great treatise on the Middle Way, where he talked about the wisdom to realize emptiness. That is what frees us from samsara. But he talked about that his treatise, you know, on the Middle Way was his greatest work. But then this one, Precious Garland, is also one of his very widely respected works. And so I had the privilege, one of my teachers, Geshe Jampa Tekchok, who was the abbot of Sarojay Monastery for some time, he gave teachings on Nagarjuna's Precious Garland. And I had the privilege of editing his teachings to form a book. So it became this book, which we titled Practical Ethics and Profound Emptiness. And so it's Geshe Jampa Tekchok's commentary on Nagarjuna's Precious Garland. And in the Geshe-la's text, and in Nagarjuna's text, he talks a lot about truth and the importance of truth. And truth is the opposite of fake news. So I thought I would base the talk on what Nagarjuna said. Now, you might say, but he lived in the second century AD, so does what he say actually pertain to us? And it does. It completely pertains to us. And what is very great about this book is Nagarjuna was, he delivered it to a king, to quite a wealthy, powerful king. And so as the king's spiritual mentor, he, you know, described the path. And yeah, and he had to be kind of careful because kings can be a little bit picky and persnickety. And so, but he said, I'm telling you the truth, and here it is, and he laid it out. So he laid out the path to awakening in the book, but he also laid out how to run a good government. And so sometimes I've given talks based on this text, but the talk title has been something, what, do you remember what the exact titles were? They were basically about how to administer a proper government, how to run a country. Yeah. And so here's this great Dharma master telling the king how to run the country so that the king creates virtuous karma. Yeah. And so that the people prosper. So it's a completely different way of running a country than most politicians do. And yet the advice he gives the king fit very well with a progressive agenda nowadays, you know, with people who care about climate change, social welfare, refugees, immigrants, war. All those kinds of things were, you know, happened at Nagarjuna's time, and most of them were addressed in this book. So it's quite interesting to see how to run a government from a Buddhist perspective, you know, where you're really, as a leader, trying to keep your own mind in a virtuous state, make your own actions virtuous, and then make your kingdoms prosper without just looking out for your own status and wealth as the leader. Okay. So quite interesting. Yeah, this book, it can take you in many different directions, but today we'll talk about it as it relates to the truth and how important the truth is. So, let's start with a little bit of meditation, and then we'll set our motivation, and then I'll give the talk, okay? And then we can have some Q and maybe A at the end, okay? And let's generate our motivation. Think that we will listen and share the Dharma together this evening so we can develop the wisdom, compassion, power, and skillful means that are necessary to be of the greatest benefit to each and every living being. So with a very long gaze and firm determination to practice the path as long as it takes, let's aspire for full awakening so we can be of great benefit to sentient beings. And let's make that the motivation for sharing the Dharma this evening as well. in his text, The Precious Garland, there, Nagarjuna deals with a wide variety of topics, but he comes back again and again and again to truth. Yeah. Usually you would think, okay, he talks about it one place and then not again. But repeatedly he comes back to the theme of truth. So I thought I would read a little bit from his verses and also the commentary and give you some commentary myself about what he says, because the truth is clearly the opposite of fake news. Okay? And, you know, when you really think of it, and because he really explains the benefits of the truth and the harm of not speaking the truth, then you really see how, you know, the fake news that is spreading nowadays, and especially in social media, and how many people, they just say whatever, and then it goes viral. You know, we really begin to see how damaging that is for the individual and for society. Okay? And so what we want to come out of this is a very firm determination in our own hearts to be loyal to the truth. Okay? And so this will come out as I read, but I'll give you a little taste. Nagarjuna is very clear that the truth doesn't mean just saying what is factually accurate. Okay? It also has to be said with a good motivation. If we say what is factually accurate, but with the motivation to harm others, that is not the truth. Okay. So this is a little bit different than you may have thought of the truth before. Yeah, because I had always been brought up, oh, it means just what is factually accurate. Not to Nagarjuna. It has to be said with a good motivation, not with a motivation to harm. Also, the truth does not include little white lies that we say to save face. Okay? Anybody here tell those little white lies that don't really matter? Who does? A few honest people and mostly dishonest people. Because saving face is a big thing, isn't it? You want to save face, you want other people to save face. So it's kind of. Right? Yeah. And you're taught since you were little that that's what is polite and kind to do. Personally speaking, I have trouble with that, because when people, I find that most little white lies are not necessary to tell at all. Yeah, they're really not necessary. People can handle the truth. If somebody asks you out for the evening and, you know, you're tired and you don't want to go, instead of saying, I'm busy, I have an appointment with somebody else, you just say, I'm tired and I need to rest. And I think the other people understand that, because they get tired and need to rest too. But I find that when somebody makes an excuse to me, and I usually find out about it, then I don't trust that person much afterwards. Okay. Even if it was a supposedly small thing, it interferes with the relationship. I remember one other time, a very close friend of mine lied to me. In his mind, it was a little white lie. And of course, when I found out, I said, why did you need to lie? You know, it was a small thing. I would have understood perfectly. Yeah. And so to me, when people don't tell me the truth, it's almost as if they're saying, we don't think you're mature enough to handle the truth, so we have to say something that we think will please you instead. And I feel I'm mature enough to handle the truth. You know, you don't need to worry about saving face in front of me. Yeah. Because actually, if you lie to me and I find out, you're really going to lose face. Okay. Anyway, so the first place in the precious garland where the topic of the truth comes up is when Nagarjuna is talking about the four means of attracting others. Okay, so when you want to, he talks about this in the sense of when you want to be able to influence others in a positive way, then there's four things to do so that they will develop trust, and then you can influence them in a virtuous way, especially by teaching the Dharma. Okay? So the four ways to attract others are, first of all, being generous and giving people material support, because if people don't have material support, then they're not going to be able to practice the Dharma or do anything else. So that's how we help them first. Then the second thing is to speak in a pleasant way to them about the Dharma by instructing them on karma. Okay, so what are the causes of a good rebirth? What are the causes of a lower rebirth? Yeah. And just teaching people about karma in general so they become aware that their actions have an ethical dimension, and their actions bring results that they themselves will experience either in this life or in future lives. Okay? So speaking the truth about the law of karma, yeah, when people are ready to hear it, then that's a very important way of speaking the truth. Okay? Of course, if somebody's not ready to learn about karma, don't teach them that. Okay? Then the third thing to attract others so we can benefit them is to be beneficent by encouraging them to practice the Dharma and implement the teachings that we've given. So again, you know, that kind of encouragement to create virtue, to do good, that's a form of virtuous speech. It's the opposite of fake news. Okay? So many people come to me after a family member has died, and they say, how can I benefit my family member? Yeah. And so of course I say, you know, donate their possessions to a charity and dedicate the merit for them. But what I've noticed is people really want to benefit their family members after the family members are dead. But while they're alive, they don't think very much about how to benefit their family members and prepare them for a good rebirth. Okay? They think instead of how to have a good time with their family members. But in the process of having a good time, then sometimes you create a lot of negative karma, which doesn't help your family members after they pass away. Yeah. So if you really want to benefit your family members, you know, set a good example in your own behavior and encourage them to be generous, to be kind, to keep good ethical conduct. Okay, these kinds of things. And then if your relatives you know, do that and create virtue and abandon non-virtue while they're alive, then after they die, you don't need to worry about their rebirth. But if while they're alive, you know, you encourage them to be very stingy so that the family has more money, or you encourage them to speak harshly about somebody else behind their back, then you're not benefiting them at all in this life or for the future lives. Okay, is that making some sense to you? Yeah? Okay, so think about that. And then the fourth way to attract others is to act in a way that accords with what we have said. In other words, what they call it, walk your talk. Okay, whatever we are, practice what you preach. Yeah. So if we say something, then we should mean it, we should live by it. Okay, okay. Then Nagarjuna gives another couple of verses, and he says, a single truth uttered by kings makes their subjects have firm trust in them. Likewise, one falsehood on their part is the best way to lose that trust. So although he's talking about kings and people in leadership positions, it applies to us also. And, you know, you may be the leader in your family, you may be a manager at work. You know, we have all sorts of positions of responsibility. And what he's saying is if we tell the truth to the people who are looking to us, they will trust us. But if we tell one lie, then that trust is gone. So that really pertains to what I said before about that time a friend of mine lied to me. And it was a very close friend. And I was so shocked why he did it. But it really interfered with our relationship afterwards because I was always uncertain. Is he telling me the truth? Is he not telling me the truth? Okay? So it's really saying, you know, watch our speech, because we can create a lot of good by telling the truth. We can create a lot of harm by telling lies. Okay? If you have any doubt about that, watch what's happening in the U.S. these days, and you will see it very clearly. Okay? Yeah. Okay, then another verse, to speak the truth is to speak in a manner that is not deceptive. It is not what is in fact distorted by an intention. Okay? So what he's saying here is that we have to say what is non-deceptive, that is not distorted by having a rotten or corrupt intention. Okay? So when we lie to people to get something from them, yeah, when we lie to them to manipulate them so that they'll do what we want them to do. Yeah. So all of that is definitely lying. But even if we tell the truth, but it's with a rotten motivation, that isn't the real truth. For example, okay, do you ever talk behind people's back? Oh, none of you people do, yeah. It's other people who talk behind your back, right, and ruin your reputation, but you never do that to other people, okay? But sometimes it might happen. You know, we hear somebody say this and that about that person, and we think, oh, if I tell that person that this person said blah, blah, blah about them, and I don't like this person over here, and I tell that person, then that person will side with me against against this person who I already don't like. Okay? It happens in your workplace offices where everybody scapegoats one person. Now, you ever been in an office where that happens? Where everybody talks badly about one person and makes it sound like everything going wrong is due to that one person. Yeah. And they may be saying what's true, but it's with the intention to cause division among people who were harmonious. Yeah. It's done with the intention, I'm going to get everybody on my side against somebody I don't like. So this person made one small comment. Then I go and I tell everybody else, do you know what they said about you? They said blah, 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 blah. And it's true, but my motivation is to make them not get along. Yeah. Then this person gets angry at that person. Yeah, and I want these two people not to get along because I'll benefit if they don't get along. Okay, so like in a workplace, if these two people don't get along and the boss is looking for somebody who is very friendly and good-natured and gets along with everybody, then the boss will look at me and not those two people because I've caused them to fight. Mm-hmm. So this person now is mad at that person, says something to me, I go back to this person, do you know what they said about you? And I tell the truth, but it's with my rotten motivation. Okay? That's not the truth. So we have to be very careful because it's so easy to cause disharmony amongst people by the what we say, you know? Especially when we don't listen very well and this person says some general remark, but then I take it and I exaggerate it just a little bit, you know, because actually they said this and that, but they really meant this and that. So I just emphasize to this person what that person said, yeah, so that I can make them quarrel. Mm-hmm. Okay. This can happen in romantic relationships. Yeah, you're jealous of one person, so you say something because you want people to quarrel, to not get along. Yeah. It can happen in family relationships with your siblings. Yeah, you want to look good and you don't want your brother or sister to look so good. Okay, so we have to be careful about this kind of speech. A statement is true by being of benefit to others. The other kind of statement is false since it is not beneficial. That's what I was saying before. If you say something that's true, but it's not beneficial, it's a false statement. So we really need to stop and say, what's my motivation when I'm speaking? Okay? So Khyentse Rinpoche is, I'll read you a little bit of what he says here. He says, we may think that small lies are unimportant or even beneficial if they help us get away or get our way or accomplish a project. I knew a young boy who thought telling the truth was foolish because when he told the truth to his teacher, the teacher would scold him for playing rather than studying. Whereas when he told a few little lies, the teacher would praise him and give him a sweet. Okay? Lying definitely harms us as well as others. It destroys trust in relationships. Once damaged, trust is hard to restore. Nagarjuna is pointing out to the king, as well as to us, his readers, that we lie all too often. If you have a habit of telling lies, even little ones, give it up. Then he says, when you speak only the truth, engage in a path of truth, and always act on the basis of truth, then even if temporarily things may not go very well for you, in the long term you will get a true result. From truth comes truth. Traveling a true path, you will reach a true result. Even if you have other faults, people will trust you, and trust is the basis of all good relationships. Okay, very wise here. Now, the other day I was having lunch with some people, and the host was a businessman. And every year when I come to Singapore, almost every year, he has a lunch and invites his friends. And every year he asks me the same question. And every year I give him the same answer. I'm wondering if he's hoping one year I'll give him a different answer. But what he says, what he asks, is he says, I'm a businessman, and to close deals, I need to lie. If I tell the truth, then we won't close a deal and my company will lose money. And so that's the question every year, okay? And every year I tell him the story of a friend of mine. She was an American woman who was an executive at Levi Strauss in Hong Kong. And I asked her this question one time about, is it necessary to lie when you do business in order to close deals? And how do you, as a business executive, keep your precepts to not lie? So she told me that when you do business, if you lie to your customers or clients, they usually are going to find out. And then after that, they won't trust you because they've been cheated. And they won't come back to you for business in the future. And they won't recommend you to their friends either. But, she said, if you speak truthfully and are truthful with relationships regarding money and payment and so on, she said, then your customers trust you. They will come back year after year after year and keeping doing business with you. So even though the first year you may make a little bit less money than if you had lied and, you know, gotten them to pay more, in the long term, because the people come back to you year after year, your company is much more successful and you make more money than if you lie. And in addition, those people trust you, so they will tell their friends, who will then come and do business with you. So every year I say that to this businessman, you know? And I think it's quite wise. Yeah, would you, if somebody lied to you in a business deal, would you go back and do business with them? No way. Because you know they're going to cheat you again. But if somebody told you the truth and somebody was fair, yeah, then you would trust them and you would go back again and again, wouldn't you? Yeah. So the same thing if you're dealing with customers and clients. If we're fair, if we're just, it will turn out well. Otherwise, we dig ourselves into a ditch. To speak the truth is to speak in a manner that is not deceptive. In other words, do not try and make someone believe something that is counter to the facts. In addition to being factual, truthful speech has another important element. It must not harm another person or be spoken with the intention to harm someone. Our intention must be to benefit others in the long term. To tell a hunter where to find deer harms not only the deer, but also the hunter, for he creates destructive karma by killing. A true statement must benefit others, and it must be told with a motivation to benefit. Saying what is factually accurate with the intention that others suffer is not truthful speech. And so, you know, people always come and ask this question, you know, about the hunter. Yeah, the hunter comes and says, where is the deer? I want to shoot it. And so, well, I have to tell the truth. So I say that the deer went down that path. And then the hunter goes and kills it. And something seems really wrong about telling the truth in that situation, doesn't it? Yeah. So, yeah, something is wrong. So, you know, it has to be beneficial. Now, does that mean you have to lie to the hunter? Okay. No, it doesn't mean that you have to lie. There's all sorts of ways of evading answering a question. Ask any teenager, they're extremely good at it. Okay, when your kid is a teenager, and you need to know how to avoid answering a question, ask your kid, okay? Or remember your own teenage years, what you did. Yeah, were you completely truthful to your parents when you were a teenager? So, there's different ways, you know? The hunter comes and says, where's the deer? And you can just go, wow, it's really beautiful weather today, isn't it? You know, like, you know, you're out hunting today in this beautiful weather and da-da-da-da-da, and you change the subject, okay? Because we do that all the time anyway, don't we, when we don't want to answer a question? We change the subject. Huh? So rather than lie, if it's going to result in something harmful to somebody else, you change the topic. Okay. I was once at, my friend invited me to his house for some holiday meal or something. And his parents, I don't know what the topic was, but his parents started, I could tell that it was an old conversation where they didn't get along and they were starting to get into that conversation again that was going to wind up being fractious. So I just, you know, changed the subject in the conversation. Yeah. And then there was no fight that resulted in, you know. My friend said to me afterwards, he said, you changed the subject. I should have thought about that before. Yeah? Yeah? You protect people from quarreling. What about a situation? I always give this example too, because it happens. Okay? Your grandma asks you over for a meal. Yeah? And she cooks exactly the food that you can't stand. And you're eating the meal, and Grandma says, how do you like the food? So do you say, Grandma, it stinks. You know, I'm telling the truth, it stinks. You're not, no, you don't say that to Grandma. But you can't lie and say, oh, it's delicious, either, because you're kind of picking at it and seeing if you could feed it to the dog under the table. Okay, so you can't say it's delicious either. So what do you do? Okay. Yeah?
Yeah, you say, oh, that was nice, but I don't want to eat that again.
That's one way. But I have another way, okay? Yeah? Because Grandma's question, her real question, isn't about, do you like the taste of the food? What does she really want to know when she asks you that?
appreciate.
Yeah, do we appreciate? She's saying, I care for you, and I cooked a meal to express my love for you. Do you get my love? Are you receiving my love that I'm expressing by cooking you a meal? That's her real question. So you can answer that question truthfully, and you can say, Grandma, I really appreciate, you know, you spent many hours today cooking this meal, you know, because you care about me, and I care about you in that same way, and I'm really happy to be here with you this evening. Then you've said the truth, Grandma's happy.
Okay. I don't know what's the style. Can I ask a question now before you go on?
Huh?
I don't know what's the style. Can I ask a question now before you go
on? Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So in this case, if let's say you say that, right, and you say that, you know, I appreciate your effort, but what Grandma hears is, oh, she likes my food. Then what is that?
Oh, no, because she's saying that if you say I appreciate your effort to Grandma, then Grandma hears you like her food. No, because her real question is, you know, I cook this because I care about you. Do you care about me? Are you getting my message that I care about you? That's what she's asking. So when you say, I really appreciate your cooking this food, then what she understands is, yes, you care about me, that I spent the afternoon cooking this because I care about you. So I think, you know, very often when we talk to people, people ask one question, but their real question is something else. And it's always helpful to try and figure out what is somebody's real question and then address that question. But in this circumstance, you know, doing that, then you don't have to lie. Okay? Okay, then, talks about it here. Okay, so then Nagarjuna always, he says in this verse, wisdom and dharma always increase in a king who consults with those who are restrained in speech and pure and possess undefiled wisdom and compassion. And so what Nagarjuna here is recommending to the king is to rely on special friends and advisors. In other words, you know, we always turn to different people for advice. We turn to different people to share our experiences. So to really think carefully about who we tell what to, and whose advice we listen to. Because if we listen to people who give bad advice, who lie when they give advice, we're going to wind up in trouble. If we listen to people who tell the truth and have a good motivation when they give advice, then the advice is going to be very helpful to us. Okay? So he's saying here, to continually improve your wisdom and virtue, rely on special friends and advisors. Nagarjuna outlines four qualities of such friends. First, they are honest and their speech is restrained. A monarch does not need someone who flatters him and says he is a good leader when in fact he is harming others. Think about that. When you're a leader, very often people flatter you because they want to get on your good side. So they lie. And they say, oh, what you did is so good. You're so wise what you're doing. Their motivation is to get on your good side so they can get some advantage. Yeah. But those are not wise advisors, because their speech is not pure. Their speech is said with a really rotten motivation. Okay? So, yeah. So a monarch doesn't need people who flatter him when in, and say he's wonderful when in fact he, what he's doing is wrong. Yeah. So similarly, we need friends who will tell us the truth about our actions, not people who will just praise us because they want us to like them. Can you hold your questions for a little bit? Is that okay? A monarch has no use for those who sing his praises and tell him people love him dearly when in fact he is unpopular. Mm-hmm. Rather, a leader needs those who, with a good motivation, speaks to him directly and frankly, saying what is helpful. He needs friends who care about him and tell him when people are unhappy with the leadership. These companions will tell a leader when he is making a mistake and will counsel him in how to fix the situation. Okay? So here, you know, the advice for us, you know, we may not be a king, but we should, you know, when we need advice, when we need second opinions, yeah, look to people who will speak truthfully and frankly to us. Yeah, don't be a sucker for praise and flattery. Yeah. Most of us are suckers for praise and flattery. I'm like that. If you tell me I'm wonderful, I love you. If you blame me and insult me, I hate you. This is my problem. Okay? If I'm a sucker and can be manipulated by people who flatter me and praise me, yeah, I'm not going to be a very good leader. I'm not even going to be a very good human being because I'm going to make all sorts of ridiculous decisions so that other people will praise me and flatter me and manipulate me. Okay? So, you know, we should be very clear about who to listen to and who not to listen to. And not just seek praise and sweet words. Similarly, when other people ask us for advice, we should speak to them frankly and honestly, and not flatter them and praise them to get on their good side. Yeah. So whether it's your parents or your boss or your spouse or whoever it is, you know, to speak truthfully. Okay. Now, how do you do that when it's kind of a dicey situation? So later on in the text, Nagarjuna wants to give the king some really honest advice about how to run the kingdom. And he starts out and he says, frankly, to the king, you know, lots of people are going to lie to you and flatter you because they want to get on your good side, because then when you're dying, they can get some of your wealth. And you may have very close ministers who say sweet words to you to get on your good side. But Nagarjuna says, talking to the king, I don't want your wealth. I'm not looking for anything from you. So I'm going to speak honestly and frankly to you. And I ask you to trust me. Yeah? And then he goes on and he really gives it to the king. Yeah. Okay. But he, you know, prefaced it by explaining, you know, I may be saying some things that are unpleasant to your ears, but I'm saying them because I care for you, King, and I care about your kingdom. Yeah? And so try and do your best and listen. And then he proceeded to give the advice that may be difficult for the king to listen to. Okay? So that's how we do it if we have to say something to someone. Okay. Yeah.
There's a number of things that run through my mind when you're talking about praise. praising people, because you notice a lot of times that this idea of giving respect as a way of saving face or giving face is, you know, it illuminates in a lot of places. And, you know, how do you put it? You're forced to, you know, people have this ingrained idea that you have to lie in a lot of cases. And, you know, it's so ingrained that people don't even recognize that there's anything wrong with you.
Yeah.
Right? And then it comes down also to a matter of perception of people and how they understand situations. Because you can be honest with somebody, but they don't see it.
Yeah, so it's true. Sometimes you're honest with somebody and they don't see it. But that's their stuff. You can't control that. The important thing is you've said what is true and you have your own integrity. Yeah. When we falsify things to show respect when we don't have it, we are relinquishing our own integrity. Having a sense of integrity. And whenever I get confused in those kind of situations, like what do I say, what do I not say, I always come back to, if I just say what is true, that works. If I try and couch it and finagle it in some way, it usually gets twisted. That doesn't mean we have to tell everything to everybody. We can be tactful and we can be skillful. Yeah. But we really try and avoid buttering up to people. Yeah. Because when we flatter people and praise them and it's insincere, they'll know it after a while. Let me give you another example, okay? Yesterday, the day before, I got an email, and somebody asked me to write a very short piece praising a project that they were doing. And it's a project that I think is really wonderful, but I think that it's going to take a long time, and the people aren't real well organized, and they're expecting to do too much fancy stuff without setting a good foundation. Okay? But they asked me to write something positive for their newsletter. So what do I do? Do I talk about what isn't going well in the project? You know? And I thought, no, clearly, you know, I can't do that. But I do want to say something positive about the project, because I think the people mean well, and I think that the idea behind the project is very good, even if maybe the way they're going about doing it right now isn't completely spot on. And so I wrote something, you know, really talking about the benefits of the project and pointing out what they have done that has been successful. So in the end, you know, when I read it, I said what I said was true. It was what I actually thought, you know. And since it was, the purpose of it was to encourage people and inspire people to join the project, I think what I wrote hopefully will be helpful. Yeah. And I don't think there was any fault in me not saying, but I think, you know, they bit off more than they can chew for right now. Okay? So, you know, I didn't want to butter it up, but I didn't want to lie either. Okay? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Actually, I think sometimes when people ask you a question that puts you in the spot, it could be they're trying to reach out to you, and if you keep thinking on how am I going to express my bad feelings, it actually requires a lot more reflection. Because maybe the food is not that bad. Maybe you could think, what is wrong with the process? You can ask your grandma, have you tried tasting this? Or you could
say, I think, that would be out of point, actually.
What were you thinking when you put potato with sugar? Because if you start questioning the process, maybe she just didn't know it was sugar she put instead of salt. So you could have actually helped her.
Okay.
Replacing the thing.
Yeah, I would say that after the meal is over. Okay? My point is here, Grandma is saying to you, I love you. And if you say in response, don't put sugar in the potatoes, she realizes, she thinks that you don't appreciate her love.
I'm not asking her not to put sugar in potato, I'm just asking her why they should put potato in sugar. Because it could be something from her memory, and then you get to know her better.
Yeah.
You don't really have to say
so that. You do that when you're talking about something else. Right now, she's trying to connect with your heart.
Yeah, that's why you should connect back. Asking her about how things is. You're not saying that directly.
Okay, so we have different ideas. Okay?
Can I respond to that? Because sometimes, like you say, the truth hurts.
Huh?
The truth hurts.
Yeah, the truth hurts.
Which is that. Which is negative.
Yeah. But, well, okay, I've said what I have to say. You can agree with it, you can disagree with it. I don't feel any need to repeat it again. I think some people have understood what I was trying to say. Okay. Okay. Then he gives some more verses. Those who speak beneficially are rare. Even more rare are those who listen. And more rare yet are those who quickly implement something beneficial. Having realized that though unpleasant, it is helpful, quickly put it into practice. Just as a prudent person, in order to become healthy, takes medication even though it tastes awful. Okay? So, those who speak beneficially are rare. Even more rare are those who listen. Okay? And this is really true. They say we have one mouth and two ears, so that indicates what we need to do more of. Use our ears. Listen. Try and understand what somebody's saying. Very often, we're very full of our own ideas, we're full of our own opinions, and somebody starts to say something, and instantly this feeling comes up in ourselves, no, that's wrong, you can't say that. And we feel like we have to interrupt right away and tell that person that they're wrong. Yeah. Does that ever happen to you? Yeah, it happens, I find, especially in meetings, okay? So somebody, we're discussing something and somebody proposes an idea that I don't think is a good idea, and instantly it's like, okay, I have to interrupt right now and smash their idea and tell them they're wrong, you know? Because if I don't do it now, then everybody else at the meeting is going to believe the wrong thing, and this horrible idea will get enacted. Yeah. And then I open my mouth and interrupt and blah, blah. Okay? What I've learned is that that doesn't always work very well to counteract an idea that I don't think is correct. That sometimes by interrupting and criticizing that person's idea, I draw more attention to the idea. Yeah. Whereas if I don't say anything, then the discussion just goes on, and then people forget about it, and I don't need to say anything. Of course, if later on somebody brings it up again and people seem to be getting interested, then it may be time for me to say, you know, what my objections to what they said are, you know? But at the beginning, to really listen and not feel like I have to correct everybody all the time. Yeah? Do you feel in meetings and discussions you have to correct everybody? Yeah? One time I was doing a book reading at a bookstore in Seattle. And so I was, you know, reading from the book, and it was a Buddhist book, okay, that I had done. And then in the middle, somebody raises their hand, and she stands up, and she says, I'm from, and she tells me what Buddhist group she practices with, what tradition she practices with. And she says, I'm from, and my teacher says that this, which is the opposite of what you said, and what you said doesn't correspond with what the Buddha said, you know? And you know, it was like real clear that we weren't going to be able to have a discussion. Yeah? And so I just said, thank you very much for your comment. She sat down, and it was over. And then people afterwards, when they came up, they wanted me to sign the book, they said, wow, you handled that so well. Yeah? And it was something that, you know, for once in my life, I kept my mouth closed. Instead of getting in an argument with her, you know, in the middle of the whole thing. But it was very interesting, you know, to realize we don't need to step up and correct everybody for everything. Especially when sometimes maybe our idea isn't right. Maybe once in a while, you know, I say that to myself, you know, maybe. Once in a while, my idea is not right. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, because we all, you know, I'm being facetious here, because we always think our ideas are right, don't we? Okay, so again, you can see, you know, we're going through many places in the book. Again, he brings up about truth. So he says, for your own sake, always speak the truth, even if it leads to your death or the loss of your sovereignty. Never speak in any other fashion. Devote yourself always to the discipline of acting in accord with your statements. Glorious one, by that you will become supremely authoritative for the sake of the world. So he's saying here, always be truthful and walk the path of truth. Speak and act truthfully, even if by doing so your life is endangered or you risk losing your power and wealth. Engage in work that is beneficial for sentient beings and never act just for your own sake. Even though lying and deception may give you an advantage in this life, do not give in to behavior that destroys your good character and makes others distrust you. So these are the kind of situations that we may encounter, yeah, where we have to consider the short-term benefit or disadvantage as well as the long-term benefit and disadvantage. And there's a sutra where the Buddha speaks about this, what to do in these situations. So, if something, if a situation will bring you long-term harm and short-term harm, do you do it? No. If it brings you long-term benefit and short-term benefit, do you do it? Yes. If it brings you long-term benefit but short-term harm, then what? Do you do it or not do it? Well, something that harms you, you know, in this lifetime. Well, that's the thing, you know, that do you choose to experience something that may be harmful, but will allow you to keep your integrity and tell the truth and do what is beneficial and will bring a good outcome, maybe even in a future life? Okay, so the question is, what do you care more about, your short-term benefit or harm, or your long-term benefit and harm that comes from abandoning non-virtue and creating virtue? What is more important? The long-term, isn't it? Yeah, because short-term benefit and harm in this life lasts only a while. But if we lie, if we steal, if we live in an unethical way, we may get some short-term benefit, but in the end, we're creating a lot of negative karma, and we're the ones who are going to experience the result of that. So in these kind of cases, even though it's short-term benefit, long-term harm, we want to abandon the action. If it's, yeah, short-term benefit, long-term harm, we want to abandon. If it's short-term harm, but long-term benefit, then we should do it. Okay? So we should, what the Buddha is saying here is that when we're completely preoccupied with the happiness of only this lifetime, then we are much more likely to not keep good ethical conduct, because we may need to lie or cheat or steal or speak harshly or gossip or something, create divisive speech, in order to get what we want in this lifetime. But, and we may get what we want, but the pleasure from getting what we want in this lifetime is very short, whereas the seeds of the negative karma we create will ripen in a larger way and in a much more long-term result in future lives. Okay? And we tend to be suckers for short-term benefit. We like my pleasure now. Yeah. What makes me happy, I want it now. And so we tend to evaluate situations and decide on our behavior based on, you know, what will bring us immediate benefit. And what the Buddha is saying is, that's not so smart, yeah. Because that wealth or that popularity or that status that we got from acting unethical, it lasts a short time, but what goes with us into the next life is the karma that we create, and that will ripen in our own experience. So he's saying that's much more important to pay attention to. And that's hard to hear sometimes. That's hard to hear because, especially in our society, where we're taught from the time we're very young, you know, we should get what we want very quickly. It's push-button society, you know? You go to the vending machine, you push it, and you get your candy bar. Yeah. And so we're always looking for immediate benefit, but that's really not so smart. Mm-hmm. So that's what the Buddha's warning us about. Whereas, you know, if we give up some immediate happiness and even experience some discomfort now, yeah, if it means that we're keeping good ethical conduct, yeah, first of all, we'll feel better about ourselves. We won't have so much remorse. We won't have so much guilt. And then also in our future lives, we'll have the good results that come from ethical conduct. Okay. So the point here is, don't always listen to what society is telling you. Because what society values is not always what benefits us. Yeah, because society doesn't think in terms of future lives. Society only looks at now and this life's benefit. Yeah. So, from most people's perspective, the view is very short. Whereas from the Buddhist perspective, we always try to have a very long-term perspective for what we're doing. Think about what is the greatest benefit to the most people in the long term, and then act according to that. Okay. Oh, and then in here, he's saying, always act according to your statements. In other words, do what you say you're going to do. Yeah. Don't say one thing and act another way. Don't volunteer for something and then flake out at the last moment and leave somebody else stranded. Really value your word so that when you say you're going to do something, that people really trust that you are sincere and you will do it. Now, of course, sometimes life happens, and at the beginning, when we say, yes, I'm going to do something, we really mean it. But then something unexpected happens, and we can't do what we said we were going to do. At that time, go to the people who are relying on us and immediately tell them, you know, I'm sorry, I thought I was going to be able to do this, but there was an emergency in the family or whatever had happened, so I'm not going to be able to do what I told you I was going to do. Yeah? And so that person knows, you know, you don't wait until the last minute, and then 5 minutes before they're expecting your help, you say, oh, well, sorry, I'm not going to show up. Okay? But give them advance notice. Yeah. If you can help find somebody to substitute, do that. Don't just leave somebody else high and dry. Okay? And in that way, you know, people will trust our word and we'll feel good about ourselves because, you know, we say we're going to do something, we've evaluated the situation before, so we're not just super idealistic and unreasonably enthusiastic. Yeah, and then people learn that they can count on us. And having people's trust is very important. Yeah, it's very important. And trust is hard to earn and it's easy to lose. Okay, so there's more that can be said, but for the sake of time, we're going to stop now, and then we have some time for Q&A. Okay. Mm-hmm.
There's two parts. The first one is how can we avoid either talk at those social family gatherings? And we don't want, we hide the topic, right? People think we're not sincere. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the first part.
Okay. If it's two questions, let me answer one question at a time. Is it two questions? Yeah, okay. So your question is, how do we avoid idle talk, because if we don't say anything, then people will think we're rude or uninterested or something like that. Yeah, it's difficult sometimes. The thing of changing the topic, yeah, can work. Change the topic to something that's more interesting, where you're not just gossiping about somebody else's faults. Yeah. Or, you know, kind of listen, pretend that you're listening, but you can be thinking about something else. Or at a family gathering, there's usually many conversations going on at the same time. So you leave the conversation that's just idle talk and you start a conversation with somebody else. Okay. Second question.
The part about don't tell A that B is talking bad about A so that they will turn against each other. But then if A is talking bad about B and B thinks A is so good to be fair to B and not B. It's like wake up B and say that actually A didn't think that good about you. You know, that kind of thing. Just that
right, yeah.
B will
okay.
have wrong.
What I would do there is I would not get in the middle between A and B. When you get in the middle between two people, you know, it doesn't work out well. If A has a problem with B, I would go back to A and I would say, A, it sounds like you're angry, it sounds like you're upset, you know. You need to go and talk to B and see if you can work this problem out. And then leave it to A to go and talk to B and then let them resolve it themselves. Yeah.
What do you think, like you say, if I don't take this opportunity, I might not have an opportunity to ask you. But I'm not too sure if this is appropriate. I'm just going to say it. I feel, okay, I'm very judgmental on myself and I'm also very judgmental on other people. That's my huge ego talking, right? So I am actually pretty discouraged and disgusted about the drama that's happening around us. Like people would say, like you say, you know, people would say things to beautify things, to butter up to some people, and you know, tell lies to make other people feel good. Those are disgusting things to me. So, having said that, would that be breaking my bodhisattva vows? Because we're supposed to love all beings, we're supposed to like respect each other. And okay. I do feel that I'm breaking my bodhisattva vows every single day, feeling disgusting about myself and about other people.
Okay. So, what we have to guard is our mind here, okay? So, we don't need to remain involved in situations or stay in relationships with people who do not have good ethical conduct. Yeah? We can step aside from those relationships, step out of those situations, but in our mind, we should try and have a mind of compassion for those people, okay? So it's like, you know, you guys are creating a lot of drama. This is what I'm thinking. You're creating a lot of drama. I don't want to be part of it. So I'm going to stay out of it, yeah? But I realize that you're sentient beings under the influence of afflictions and karma. So you're just doing what sentient beings do. Yeah? And so I have compassion for you. I respect you because you have the Buddha nature, but I don't respect those actions that you're doing. Okay?
That's what I do, but then I'm concerned. I mean, I often think about the karma and affliction side, like when this person has certain behaviors, I break them down. You are this person, but you are not your karma and afflictions, and you're not your anger, you're not jealousy.
Okay.
I do that. But I'm concerned because Am I breaking my vows?
No, if you keep a positive attitude towards them, you're not breaking your bodhisattva vows. If you start saying, oh, you guys are too much, and you do this, and you do that, and in your mind, you're just constantly tearing them down, yeah, then you're giving up love for sentient beings. Okay? But if you're just saying, okay, the actions they're doing are harmful, yeah, but the person has the Buddha nature, then you're not criticizing them or losing respect for them. You're distancing yourself from those actions.
I guess at the moment is going at the same time. Sometimes I just keep trashing them, and sometimes I just keep thinking the Buddha nature and the karma in the future. So, okay, it's a work in progress. I have a work in progress. And also, I need your help. It's probably the same thing. I have an issue, and it's been bugging me for 2 years. And I know it's again my problem. There was 1 year when you came.
Okay, if this is a personal issue.
No.
Okay, so shorten your question. If you're about to tell me a long story, shorten it to 3 sentences. Okay, because it's 9:10, and I think some other people would like to ask questions.
Okay, I'll let it pass. I think about it first.
Okay. Okay. This question.
I'll just speak from here.
Okay.
So I guess I'm sort of a compulsive truth teller, and I experience a lot of psychological distress whenever I think of even trying to tell white lies. But nonetheless, there are situations in which I feel I have to hide parts of myself because I know that there, and I think this is true for many of us, parts like that, you know that people you're speaking to, you know, if you tell them the truth, they won't necessarily understand or accept you, right? Mm-hmm. And there are situations where I hate to tell a lie, mm-hmm. but there are situations where I have felt forced to, for safety or for the safety of my friends, right?
The safety of what?
For myself or, you know, or people.
Physical safety?
Socially and all sorts of other things. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, you know, I understand from the things that in extreme circumstances, I don't know whether it's only bodhisattvas, you know, they can choose to, they can commit violent acts, knowing and accepting the negative karma that will accrue. And I'm wondering whether that can be also said of, you know, after thinking about it, that you choose not to tell the truth, knowing and accepting. Being fully aware of the karma.
Okay, so they say that for bodhisattvas, that maybe to act for the benefit of somebody, they and they are willing to accept the karmic outcome of doing an unethical action for the benefit of somebody else. And so they say that is okay, due to the power of their compassion. Yeah. That is often used by ordinary beings to rationalize something. Yeah. Oh, I'm doing it out of compassion, you know, but it's really, I'm doing it because I want people to like me. I'm doing it because I don't want to have a bad reputation. So we express it in like, well, I'm doing it out of compassion, but we're not really. It's done out of self-concern. So we have to look very carefully about this. And what I find is people, what you mentioned, you know, socially, you don't want to lose faith. You don't want to lose your status socially. We are so concerned with what other sentient beings think about us. Okay. We don't seem to be concerned with what the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas think about us. Okay? Why are we so concerned with what sentient beings who are under the influence of afflictions and karma, Why are we so concerned with what they think of us? Do they have good judgment? Who has better judgment, the holy beings or ordinary beings? Yeah. Whose approval is more important to us, the approval of holy beings or the approval of ordinary beings? Okay? So we tend to just be so concerned with what other people think about us, as if all other people did every day was think about us. Yeah? Do you really think that all those people who you're so afraid will think badly about you spend most of their day thinking about you? Of course not. They're too busy thinking about themselves. Yeah? And what other people's opinions are of us, what are they? They're just thoughts. They're just energy blips. They don't have any substance to them. We can't touch them. We can't see them. Their thought sometimes isn't even vocalized. It's there and it's gone. Why are we so concerned with what other people think? Yeah? Why do we think that if other people disapprove of us, it means we must be bad? And if other people approve of us, that means we must be good. We think that, but it's really a very dumb thought on our part. Yeah? And I've experienced multiple times, it happened recently, do you remember what the situation was? It was something. What?
Whether or not monastics should make comments on political situations.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So I tend to sometimes, because to me, everything, Dharma relates to everything in life. And so sometimes at the Abbey, when I'm giving talks, I will speak about political situations in terms of the Dharma, not because I am talking about politics, but because I'm talking about ethical conduct. And so, I remember what the situation was. When right before the midterm elections, the Abbey sent out a thing to everybody, reminding everybody to vote, because the midterm elections in the U.S. were really important. And so we just sent a thing out, please vote. We didn't tell people who to vote for. We just said, please go and vote. Well, I get one email from somebody who says, oh, you talk so much about politics. Why? You shouldn't be talking about politics. You should be talking about the Dharma. You know, what kind of nun are you? This is rotten what you're doing. You know, really tore me to bits. Okay. Then, right after that, another email, somebody says, thank you so much for caring about the country and reminding us to vote. So the same situation, one person tears me apart, another person says thank you. If my self-esteem depended on what other people said about me, I would be very confused. Because they say totally opposite things about me regarding the same situation. So to me, this is like proof of forget about what other people think about you. Yeah, it's much more important to look inside and be able to evaluate our own behavior so that we feel good about ourselves. Yeah, having our own integrity at the end of the day is much more important than other people saying, I like you or I hate you, you're good or you're bad. Because we're the ones who create the karma, we're the ones who experience the result. And what other people think has nothing to do with the quality of the karma we create. Okay? This will be the last question.
You speak a lot about intention. So let's say in this world of so in this world of fake news or like a lot of information, like if I receive a notification about, let's say, bomb alert or whatsoever, but it could be fake.
Mm-hmm.
And but I have good intention to spread to others that I'm like concerned for their safety. But because the content is fake, does that make it like spreading misinformation not good, or is it actually good because I'm actually showing concern?
Yeah. If it's something that you think is suspicious and is not true, don't spread it. If there's a way to verify that, you know, who is it that's saying there's a bomb threat? Yeah, who's saying that? Or call the police, ask them, is this true? Verify things, because otherwise, you know, you could make a whole lot of people really afraid uselessly.
But it could be good things like, this food is good for everything.
Again, verify the information.
But not all information could be verified.
Then you do your best, don't you?
So Venerable, one last one. Sorry, from the whole talks and the teaching from Venerable, I gather this information. I'm not sure whether, what do you think about it? Because I think the truth actually comes in a spectrum of truth, okay? You should know your receiver of truth and be tactful, use your wisdom and compassion like what Buddha would do,
mm-hmm.
and then deliver your truth. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the truth might hurt, then mm-hmm. like taking medicine. Sometimes evading the truth might work. So to me, what I gather in this talk is that truth have very different spectrum. People handle the truth differently. So it's,
it's true that people handle the truth differently. But what we have to come back to is saying what's true with a good motivation and being as skillful as we possibly can. And knowing that we will make mistakes and learning from our mistakes. Okay? In practicing the Dharma, you know, don't expect yourself to get everything perfect and right at the beginning. You know, life is very much a learning process. So we do our best and we learn. What more can we do? Okay? And so in this whole discussion, it's always good to look at your own experience. Yeah, when you distort the truth, what happens in the situation? When you distort the truth, how do you feel about yourself in the long term? Okay, so really look about long-term results and what actually creates happiness and what creates misery. Don't just look at short-term results and what people think about you, and what is socially, the social pressure you have. Because otherwise, if we just always live according to social pressure, then we're never being really truthful to ourselves, because we're always doing what we think other people think we should do. I'm saying what I think they think I should say. That's totally crazy, isn't it? Okay? So we can't live our life always trying to second guess what we think other people think we should do or be or have. Okay? Because sometimes we may not guess correctly. And even if we do, what the other people think sometimes is totally wrong. So the purpose of our life isn't to be, you know, Miss Sweetie Pie who goes around and makes everybody happy with, you know, Miss Twinkle Toes or Mr. Twinkle Toes, you know, making everybody happy, you know, with saying all sorts of sweet things so that they'll like me. Because that's all fake, isn't it? So I think it's very important that we are true to our own hearts and we learn from when we make mistakes. Okay. So let's just sit for a minute. Let things, you know, settle and dissolve, and then we will dedicate the merit. Let's rejoice at the virtue we created, and that the virtue we created as individuals and also as a group. And let's send that out into the universe together with our prayers and aspirations that all sentient beings can live together peacefully, that all living beings will attain full awakening, that the Dharma will exist in a pure form forever, and that our teachers will live long and healthy lives and continue to guide us and teach us. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi not yet born.